Welcome to this episode of the Strong and Kind Podcast. This episode is with Dalton Lano. Dalton is a physio, which is what Canadians call a physical therapist. He is a movement practitioner. He's a coach. He's a long distance runner and strength athlete at this point. We had a really great conversation oriented around, Dalton's journey from being an athlete to performance and ultimately to becoming a physio. And we talked about the state of education for physios and helping people overcome pain. It was a really great discussion. We touched on a lot of points that I think are really useful for students and coaches, and people who just want to learn to move and continue to live well. So a great episode with Dalton. He is one of the founders of the movement. I will link his Instagram and all sorts of other links in the podcast notes. I hope you enjoy this episode. I definitely enjoyed the chat and thanks for being here. Dalton Lano. I said your last name correctly, correct?
Nailed it, man.
All right. I'm good at phonetics, I think. So I think we have a lot of overlapping beliefs and just like probably the I think we're trying to help people accomplish a lot of the same things, right? Well, let's start with like what made you I always when I talk to like other PTs, physios, it's like what made you want to pursue rehab, coaching, this type of thing?
Yeah, that's the money question. So the story kind of originally starts like, in Canada, mostly the route to like physio school is kin. So like coming out of high school, I went to the University of Windsor, which is just across the river from Detroit. And I took kinesiology there. And when you go into a kin degree, there's not a ton of routes you can go, like either you're doing physio, chiro, a master's, maybe pursuing med school. And like med school is never on my radar. And then I'd seen a couple of physios just having played sports before. And one of my like first year profs like asked me one time in a meeting like what I wanted to do, and I had no real idea, but I was like, oh, I think I might want to get into physio school. And she's like, no one gets into physio school. And then that kind of like, just from purely like, who are you to tell me that I can't get into physio school? The little chip on my shoulder. I think that honestly like drove me to look into like, okay, well, why can't people get into physio school? Because it's very competitive in Canada, just not having a ton of PT schools in Ontario, the province that I'm in. So I say that that was what ignited it. And then after I started like, volunteering and getting a more idea of what the profession had to offer, I started to realize that there was a lot of things that I enjoyed doing that I could leverage through the profession of PT. So like coaching was always something that I enjoyed. Like I enjoyed being coached. I always enjoyed taking like a leadership or coaching role on like the teams that I played. I was never like the most talented athlete, but I always like appreciated the team dynamic and understanding how, the game is played, and always saw myself going into coaching at some point. So as I started to realize that was a big part of physio, I think that motivated me. I mean, training has always been something that I've loved. So being able to like talk about exercise and doing that kind of stuff on, like a daily basis was always, something that if I could do that for most of my life, that would be, pretty cool. So I think those two things, and then just helping people has always been a part of like my upbringing, and my family. That was always just something that like we talked about a lot, and I always took on a lot of roles like helping other people, and it's just something that was really valuable to me. So I think physio kind of covers all three of those things. So it was kind of cool to see as I learned more about the profession that it actually was going to allow for me to kind of express those values, so to speak, for my career.
Gosh, it's so funny that like people like looking back at it like now, like people are like, oh, it's so hard to get into like physio school and like but I don't wanna like I just know some people it's like, gosh, you got into this, like you're terrible. You are not good at this, right? Like, and I don't know, it's one of those things. I think some of the things we and we can touch on this when it comes to you guys, like the PT Coffee Cast, but it's like okay, how this is a good reframe. How did you look at it, like on that side where you're like looking up at it versus like, okay, I've gone through it. I see you got like a Hannah Moves poster behind you, right? Like, which Nick Hannah, very much like kind of the soft, a soft skills type of guy, right? But like looking up at it, I looked at PT as an opportunity to like, I almost went down the medical school route, but it was like, I just want to help people be healthy and I want to like feel, I've always just kind of had this belief that we kind of screw people up by making them afraid. And like, I think some of it's just like growing up, like I just saw like kind of how my parents approached health, and it was a lot of like passivity. Especially like my dad was a super active guy, and then he started getting injured, and then he just like, like he didn't have his outlets because I think he felt broken to some extent, right? But like, how did you look at it, like looking up at it, and now that you're like you've achieved it, how do you what was different? Does that make sense?
Yeah, dude, I think that's changed a lot because there was a point, when I was looking up at it, it was always this like I remember like shadowing physios, and what I always really liked was their ability to like I always liked their ability to like assess and like pick out all these different things and like diagnose the stuff. Like that's kind of what originally I was like, oh, that's cool. Like they must be really smart to like be able to do all that. And not to say that we're not smart, but once I got into physio, actually like all of the stuff that I thought like I was looking up at, I actually almost drove me out of the profession in a sense, because I remember in like my second year of PT school in Canada, it's a master's, so it's 2 years. There was a point where we were just doing a ton of labs that were all manual therapy based. It was all this idea of like, you're gonna grow your ability to feel these different things, and like your hands are gonna mature, and like you're gonna be able to identify all this stuff. And I'm just sitting there like, yo, this is wild. Like, one, I don't, this is what I have to do for the rest of my career. I really don't think I'm gonna actually be able to do it. And like, I'm definitely not feeling or doing any of these
And
things. And
nobody
so,
is.
no, I
Nobody
know.
is. It's just
And so,
freaking confirmation bias, right? Or it's just like freaking yeah. I mean, I think there is I talked to this lady that I like it was kind of the same situation, like looking up at it, because I met her before I went to PT school, and she's just a really kind and caring human being, right? And she did a lot of manual therapy, and like she also just attracted people who just really wanted to, like needed and wanted 45 to 60 minutes of like talking, and like that's fine, but like, oh, we're gonna do some of these manual techniques, and it's like this is just you guys bonding as humans, like, and it's not really anything wrong with that. It's just like the narrative that like in school where there's an upslip, you got something wrong, right, that we're fixing with our hands, and really like the human body is so much more capable of than that, right?
Yeah, 100%. And so like that point in physio school, honestly, that is kind of what shifted the trajectory of like the movement and like building the Instagram brand. And like I think it was originally Will and I, when we were in second year physio school, we were just frustrated with some of the stuff that we were learning. And at that point in time, we were kind of like on Instagram just consuming content. And there was like what I would call some of the early like physio influencers on there, like putting out content. And I was like, oh, this is cool. Like maybe we should just start putting out like exercise-based content, because at the time we were really frustrated with like not getting that in PT school, like most, PTs. And so we committed to just doing that for a year, one post for a year. And we did that. But what we ended up realizing was there's like so much more opportunity out there to actually treat in the profession in a way that aligned more with us, which was like a huge eye-opener for us. Some of the first people I connected with was like Zach Gabor and the Level Up Initiative at the time, and they like opened my mind to a whole new way of treating. Like I discovered like Greg Lehman and just like all these other people that are like having big impact, who've had massive impacts on the profession, but opened my mind to being like, oh, I can actually utilize even some of those skills that I just talked about that I liked about the profession of physio and actually be really good at them and implement them on a daily basis. And that really kind of shifted the frame for me to be like, okay, cool, like I can do something with this.
What, like you kind of mentioned Yeah, you kind of mentioned, and I think this is important because I think there's a decent amount of students maybe who listen to this, or at least there's a decent amount of students who follow me. But like when you're in school and like you are kind of going through some of the like, what the heck am I doing? Or maybe, and that's the other thing. It's like a lot of students don't necessarily go through that. Like I was a personal trainer and I was like a CrossFit coach before school. And so, and I was a nursing tech. Like I worked on like in a hospital and it just made me come into it with like kind of a skeptical sense where it was a lot of my friends and colleagues, like they were kin majors, so they were biology majors. And like when you're just kind of told like this is what's going on, right? Even if it's not necessarily the best science, you just kind of digest it. And a lot of them are like way more book smart than me. So they could just like read it and be like, this is what is going on. And I'm like, is that really true? Right? But like, what's your advice for students who honestly are also being exposed more and more to people like me and you and like Greg Lehman and Zach and all these people who are like, yeah, school's great, but question it. You know, like what's your advice to them?
Yeah, I think like it's just that curiosity and exploring like what's out there. Like I think that's the most important, and just being open to learning from different areas. Like I like you know, even outside of the physio profession, just looking at strength and conditioning. Even just like I always kind of take a lot from just business and different brands and how they position themselves. I've always learned a lot from that and how they've had success with like working in a service-based industry, and I was like, oh, there's like a lot of parallels here. So I think more just keeping your mind open and exploring, and then if there is something that you feel like is off, or you're like, I don't know if this is right, like I feel like there's something else out there, or it doesn't align with me, it's like sit with that and try to identify what it is that does align with you, and then go see if there are opportunities out there that share some resemblance of what that is. Because I think that was the most important thing for me, is like I started identifying some of the values and the way that I wanted to show up as a clinician. And when I wasn't really getting that in school as much, I was like, okay, where do I go to find this? And that's where the power of the internet and social media, everyone likes to shit on it and talk a lot of smack about it, but I think it's one of the biggest opportunities we have. And to be honest, like I wouldn't be everything that I have right now, currently in my life, would not be if it wasn't for social media. Like every relationship that I developed, my business partners, this business, like, was all stemmed out of the fact that like we started a social media account when we were in our second year of physio school and just kind of rode with it. So.
Yeah, I think I mean I'm in the same boat. I think I think I've always just fortunately kind of looked at it from this framework or this mindset of like I have a message that I believe in and that I also just look at it like I think you know maybe I cut my teeth like 10 years ago and I tried to write I wrote like a blog post a day for a little while and like I still write every day and it's one big piece of just you know whether it's short form content or long form but like it's just exploration and I think so many people get into they like just are afraid to be called out by other practitioners and like hey I mean most of the stuff people like if you're like somewhat evidence-based like yeah you might get called out and but a lot of it's just preferences right and then it's just such a good you learn so much by putting out content right and some of it is yeah like you mentioned you know not like the algorithm is basically, or the Instagram social media is kind of just, it's like a high school popularity contest, right? And there's just always gonna be like the shit that people are just gonna click on and it's gonna get your attention. I think I saw a post that was either on your post or like attention is really the most important commodity in our day and age, right? And but like it's kind of always been like that. Like in high school, it's like who's the pretty girl? Who's the jock, right? Well, there's also just like in that other corner, there's like the smart kids who are pretty cool and they know what the hell's going on and like you can use it that way too, right? And yeah, I wouldn't have a business. Like I wouldn't have built enough of a local business in combination with a virtual business if I just didn't start putting out what I believe in every day, right? So and I think there's tons of utility as a practitioner, even if you don't want to be like an entrepreneur. Like, you're gonna develop confidence. You're going to bump up against stuff that you frankly just stop doing when you're not in school anymore, right?
Yeah, I've always said like I said this on our podcast one time, like I think content is like one of the best professional development tools because it really forces you to, you know, if you're going to speak on something, you're going to put it out there, you better go look it up, you better, you know, be confident in how to deliver it. Then you got to figure out, it depends on who you're speaking to, but we've always tried to speak to the public. So it's like, okay, how do I take this information and put it in a digestible way so that I can educate the public, which is a huge part of what we do in our career. And then being able to communicate that effectively, whether that be written, whether that be verbally, like verbally building that skill of how to, you know, communicate with your mouth is so important. And like, you know, social media is a great way to practice that. It's like you can literally pull your camera up, you can try to riff on an idea. How do you deliver it as effectively as you can? It goes out there, and then there's so much content out there. Like 2 days later, no one even knows, you know, and if it was bad, it's all good. And if it was good, no one probably still knows about it, you know? So
Yeah,
it's like,
right.
it's a really good way to do that. And I think as clinicians, the more reps we have at that, the better. And there you'll run into times where, you know, you post something that maybe isn't as up to date as you thought, or maybe that's evolved. And like, you know, if we go look at back at the content we were posting in 2017, I'm sure there's some stuff we could find there that we've even like moved away from in terms of how we, you know, totally align with treating. And I think that's a good thing. Like, I think that is like a positive piece of development for a person and a clinician.
Yeah, it really is. There's really good upside, and there's not a shit ton of downside. Like, you put out a post, and you're like, ah, that didn't do very well. Well, guess what? Only 50 people saw it, right? And part of the game is learning to, part of the game is like putting stuff out there that you feel authentic about, and but also like that is, you know, good. I'm a big like So Good They Can't Ignore You. Like, that's a Cal Newport book. And I think people, the tricky part, and this blends well into like imposter syndrome too. It's like you can't, you're not gonna get so good that they can't ignore you not doing anything and not putting stuff out that's actually visible, right? And if your aim is to become like a clinician who's impressing other clinicians, great, right? And I think that's where a lot of people's imposter syndrome is. They're just worried about being judged by other practitioners, like everything is an academic pursuit. But like, most people do not understand, you know, pain, rehab, the human body, nutrition, pretty much any of this stuff. Most people understand it at like a first or quote unquote second grade level. So if you just start showing up and putting, and you're at a fifth grade level and you put out what you know and it's not harming to people, you're gonna be okay, right?
Yeah, totally, man. I feel like the amount of mind I blow with just changing the foot position of a rear foot elevated split squat is, you know, like
Yeah.
people get all worried about stuff, but like when you're with your clients and you're like, hey, you know, if we just like move this foot a little bit and we can bias, you know, this other area, this is really going to help improve your, you know, your quad strength. They're like, damn. I'm like, yeah, let's go, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that's the other thing too. It kind of ties into, I think there's this illusion of that there is like some secret knowledge out there, right? And it's really no, it's just refinement. Like, you know, most of what I've really understood about like or and learned about biomechanics is not because I looked at a textbook that told me the, you know, how a ball and socket joint works. Like, I understand that in principle, but like, oh, this is a Romanian deadlift. Like, you're pushing your hips back and you're internally rotating. Do you feel what that feels like? Oh yeah. Do you get in that position very much? No. Okay. Like, this is probably gonna make your hips feel better, right? And build a strong butt, right? Like, that type of stuff. Like, it's really simple and practical, and we just have to get people to like try, right? Or even just like the amount of people who they'll, you know, and this is one of the tricky things about like an online presence and then like trying to do stuff virtually or in person. It's every person is different with like a different starting point. And so, you know, you might put out like Instagram like 5 or 6 years ago was just how-to videos, how to do this, how to do that, and it would blow up. And then also the negative part of that, maybe it wouldn't blow up, but it would grow, The negative part of that is like how there's a lot of utilities in that, but most of it's just like you have to practice. Like you have to play around with some of this stuff. And you know, I've had people who are like lost and like, well, my foot positioning is actually like I can't squat this narrow. And I'm like, well, just widen your feet. They're like, it's okay
100%.
to do that. I'm like, yeah. Like if it feels good and you're actually moving through a pretty good squat pattern, that's okay. But we've like over-intellectualized movement for people, right?
Yeah, 100%. I totally agree with that. And I think it can be overwhelming for like clinicians and in new grads. And I know we were talking a little bit about like, imposter syndrome and that whole scenario. And I think like a big part of what drives that, Will and I, we run a mentorship for like new grad students, and we're actually just going through a cohort right now. And we talk in our very first module about, overcoming and managing imposter syndrome, which is like a very hot topic a lot of times, I think, with clinicians. And we kind of developed this idea of like the super physio is what everyone's trying to become, this physio that has all the answers, that has all the tools, that can like, figure every person out and fix them. And when we're in physio school, we're almost like, brought up to attain this super physio by like filling, our toolbox with more knowledge and more knowledge. And the funny thing is that super physio just doesn't exist. Like you're never going to reach that person. And actually, the more knowledge you start consuming via like, courses, the more you realize you don't know anything and you're actually not going to become the super physio, which I feel like drives more imposter syndrome. And so what we try to have people think about is like, you are the super physio. You just need to identify like what is your values, what are your standards as a clinician, how do you want to show up on a daily basis, what parts of clinicians do you really like, what parts of other clinicians do you not like and you don't want to show up as, and really like develop this version of yourself that you use as a standard to filter your decision-making process. And once you have those standards identified in a sense and what you value, then you can start deciding like, oh, okay, like communicating with clarity is very important to me. That's a value that I hold. Well, how do I improve my communication? Okay, I'm going to take a course with Nick because Nick is the master at that and he really helps you identify your communication skills. It's like, if, using strength and conditioning principles are something that you value, which I think all of us as clinicians should, it's like, okay, I need to go take a course for that. And you can start to like actually fill, that I hate the word toolbox, but like you start to fill that with actual information that you're going to use to fulfill on the clinician that you want to be. Versus I found is like all my classmates when we were originally like graduating school were just like, all right, I'm taking all these courses, and they stacked like, five, six courses. And I'm sitting there like, yeah, I don't even know what I want to do. Like, I'm gonna think about this a little bit. And I think a lot of people get caught in that cycle, and it actually just ends up thrusting them into the profession, into a job or into a place that they actually don't even really align with. And now they're working this job and showing up at the clinic on a daily basis, treating people in a way they don't want to treat, which is not fulfilling them at all. And I think that drives like more imposter syndrome, because now you're just you're showing up as this person that you don't really want to be, trying to tell this person like you can help them, but you don't even know if you can or how you can, because you're just kind of there. It's a really like weird thing.
It's an intellectual pissing contest. Like, or like, and if you're in, if you're a new grad, I think you hit on some big pieces there, but like, if you're a new grad and you just like want, you got into this. So I think there's this core belief that I have. It's like, well, we're all just trying to like manage like our quote unquote ego. Like we go into a lot of this stuff, and I want to come back to like your sporting history and all that type of stuff, but we go into this stuff because like I like helping people. Like I like communicate. When I help people, it makes me feel good, right? I think that's just kind of the nature. I like you was also like not the most talented kid on the team ever, but I was like I showed up and I played hard and I was a leader and I facilitated like other people and that made me feel good, right? And I just like to play sports. I like to move. I mean, if I don't move, I'm a freaking asshole. Like, so I think there's just a lot of utility in this stuff, but like, why do I do a lot of this stuff? Or, and it, I think I'm getting better at it. The older I get, it's like, I'm doing it because it makes me feel good. Right. But also like, well, the real goal is to help people build confidence and, not be afraid of their body and understand that pain, Pain is a complex thing, but a lot of times if we trace back our steps, we can kind of figure it out, right? Like, yeah, your back doesn't hurt because just because you may have a herniated disc or some type of something going on, degenerative disc. Like, it hurts because 2 days ago you did a 40-mile bike ride, and then yesterday you were in your garden for 6 hours. And we can like piece those things together and like, what does that mean, right? But like you talked about like the super clinician, right? I think there's people in our field that, and there's people in every field that do this, that make it seem like I have the answers. And whether that be manual or whether that be exercise, like Kelly Starrett was the super PT for me when I was like considering what I wanted to do. And like, don't get me wrong, I think he's a cool guy. I think some of the stuff that he puts out now is just kind of marketing. And like I think like I look at somebody like Greg Lehman is not well known by the public, right? Greg Lehman is known by like clinicians like us, but like who are some of the who are maybe the super PTs for you? Like right now there's one guy that comes to mind and his name's David Gray, and I think he's freaking super smart. I like David Gray
Yeah,
a lot. But
he's great.
I also think people have been like, wow, he's got like it all figured out. He's like, he's just freaking making people move and hold positions that they don't hold. And like he's getting people to do a shit ton of reps, and he's using plyos, and he's like breaking it down in a way that is almost both like basic, yet almost like, and he's a really good communicator. And none of this is really a knock on David Gray. I just think I see so many people being like, I was doing David Gray's program. I'm like, cool, but like it's still just strength and conditioning, right? It's just slow progression, or it's just building people up, right?
Yeah, and I mean that is the part of today's day and age where like social media can really just blow you up, right? It's
Yeah.
like he probably didn't even ever expect that he was going to be thrusted into this, position, and he's just doing his thing.
Yeah.
And I think that is like definitely, something that can happen, which is a good thing if like I think he perpetuates like really great stuff, and I think he really can help a lot of people. But I think like as a consumer, you just have to be mindful and like realizing that there's always going to be like another side of it. Like there, people are trying to make money, so you're going to like communicate and like sell your stuff. And like when you break down what he's doing, it's like you and I are doing the exact same things. And I think like as clinicians, you just got to get good at communicating that to your clients and communicating that to the people that you want to work with. And maybe it's not on the grand scale of like blowing up on social media, but even just in your community, being able to quote unquote market yourself and position yourself as someone who can actually use those skills to help people, I think is like an underutilized skill that clinicians need to develop in order to actually help people the way that they want to help people.
Yeah, and like that's not a knock on like again, it's not a knock on like anybody who blows up. Like I think David Gray has blown up in good ways because like he's not perpetuating fragility of the human, right? I think what he does is he takes like almost like, oh, this is an RDL. Like, okay, we're gonna freaking like really make you like feel the shit out of it, right? Which is something that, like you can, it's both good and bad. It's not good and bad. It's just different, right? And different attracts clinicians. Like, oh, I will have people message me. Like, I never thought about like making an 80-year-old woman do like lat pull downs. I'm like, yeah, why not? She's just old. She can still lat pull. Like, and it's just getting people to be like, oh, like, that made sense, or that was new and different in a way that still fits the principles, right? And I think that's what I think a lot of people, because there's also just people who like are scaring people out there. And I think that's a big piece of why I am so passionate about what I am, because it's like there's no need to be scared of this shit, right?
No,
Like
yeah.
it's yes, it sucks, but like you're gonna get you're if you tweak your back, you're gonna freaking be okay if you just keep going, right? If you hurt your knee, like it sucks, don't get me wrong, but like if you keep going, your knee will probably bounce back, like if and so many of these things, and our job is, I think, to help facilitate that bouncing back with more confidence and perspective and keeping people and trusting that process. And like that's what being like a good teacher or a coach is, right?
Yeah, I totally agree.
When you Okay, so you mentioned sports growing up. I want to come back to this. Like, what did you play? Do you still, what are you pursuing now as a, an
Yeah, it's a
adult?
good. So I played a bunch of like I kind of played everything growing up, like hockey, baseball, basketball. But when I got into high school, I kind of switched more towards football and had like my most success playing football. And so I played that through high school, through university. And then once I finished that, it was kind of a little bit of like that crisis moment of like, what do I do as an athlete? And so I got into CrossFit. And I went from like a 260 pound defensive lineman to like, 195 pounds doing CrossFit. And loved everything about CrossFit. It was like earlier days. Like I want to say it was probably like 2012 when I kind of got into it, right when it was like rocking and rolling.
It's
And so
kind of
like,
fall. It's kind of fallen, like, right? Like,
yeah.
I found it in like when did I find it? 2008 or 9-ish, when it was like the
Yeah.
workout of the day would still be occasionally like go do 30 minutes of handstand practice, right? And
Yeah.
then it morphed, and like it's still an awesome, it's an awesome thing, and it gets people moving. But like, yeah, it definitely went
Yeah.
through this like arc. I can't believe it. I was gonna ask you what you played. So you were a defensive lineman.
Yeah, I was big. I was a big boy
How tall are you?
for not very tall, like 6 feet.
That's not, I mean, you're not short, but that's too, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, defensive lineman at 6 feet is a little short.
Yeah, that's why I never made it very far.
Yeah.
That's why I had to retire. I was just so undersized and small.
Yeah. That's awesome though. But was it hard for you to transition from being like a big guy to kind of like where you are now?
Yeah, I wouldn't say it was hard. It's just like I've always been a bigger dude, and that's always been kind of like part of my upbringing. I was always the fatter kid, so to speak. So like transitioning into like not like having that change is like a bit of a mental shift, to be honest. And like I was always active, always playing sports, always up training, but like I always just like leveraged being bigger. That was what made me good at like different sports. Like I just utilized that well. And then once I transitioned away and it wasn't really a value to me anymore, it was like trying to shift that. And I just loved training so much that like I always knew that like I would, once I got out of football, like I would get down and wait. And like it was just a matter of trying to find fill that void of like what was gonna bring me passion. And like CrossFit did that. And then after I kind of burnt out with CrossFit a little bit, I just did more general strength conditioning. Like I was a big fan of I came across like Power Athlete HQ, and like it was once CrossFit football. So like CrossFit led me to a lot of like great people that I learned like a ton from and led me down a lot of good routes, which is awesome. And then I was just working as like a strength conditioning coach and just training kind of like mixed modalities like strength and power and like different forms of endurance, probably still throwing like CrossFit like Metcons into my training. And then when COVID hit, I really went down the running rabbit hole. And like since then I've been pretty full into like more endurance-based stuff. Like from COVID to just this past year, I basically went and did like a bunch of marathons and ultra marathons and wanted to try to run like a sub 3 hour marathon, which I'm still kind of trying to do. And
How
that's kind of
close
where I am now.
are you?
I ran a 3:10 a year ago, basically now. So like the cutoff now for qualifying for Boston in my age group, I'm 31, is like a 2:55, I think. And then you probably would have to get, 5 to 8 minutes under that. So looking at more like a 2:50. So still got a little bit of ways to go, but I would
Have
say
you?
that's a big. Go ahead.
Sub 3 is it's a 6:30 average, right?
Yeah, I go in kilometers. So like
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
it's like a 4:15 per kilometer pace
Okay,
roughly
I
will like
gotcha. I gotcha.
sneak you under like sub 3. Yeah.
Have you ever seen Casey in the Stats, Sisyphus and the Impossible Dream?
Yeah, it's a great video.
I watch that every once in a while because it's just so freaking good. So, I mean,
Yeah.
kudos to you. I think like, you gotta, that's, this is the thing about a lot of this stuff for us. I mean, like, not to become too nihilistic or pessimistic, but like you just gotta have something to freaking chase. Like you gotta, like, life kicks the crap out of you if you don't just say I want to do some stuff and go do it, right?
Yeah, and I
What's,
think it's an important lesson just like for our clients, right? Like I really
yeah.
try to have people like be pursuing something or help them identify what they're pursuing. And it might not be a sub 3 hour marathon, but it might actually just be like, I want to be able to play with my kids when I'm, 50, 60 and like go out and like, keep up with that, but not have to like sit out of that. It's like, if you can really identify that in people, and that's why I think, as physios, we sit in such a good opportunity to actually empower people to take control of their health, because oftentimes they're coming in for an injury, but you can reframe that injury to helping them develop this like drive for why they just need to be healthier, like why they need to be stronger, why they need to keep pursuing this. And I don't think we see how valuable that is yet as a profession. Like, we don't leverage it enough. We don't like communicate it to the public enough as like that's what we do. We're here communicating oftentimes I can reduce your pain, but like it's way deeper and way more impactful than that. And I think that's what fires me up. Like, that's what has me like doing everything I can to like make people aware of that,
I think that's a super important point. And I think one of those things that, like, me first year in practice type of situation, even though, like, and I, coming from CrossFit, coming from like personal training, it's like, well, just because your shoulder hurts doesn't mean that you shouldn't go hop on the bike. Right. But I wasn't confident in saying that because I just like, well, I'm just supposed to fix their shoulder pain, quote unquote. Right. Even though, like, hey, if you go ride the bike for 10 minutes, you're gonna holistically feel better. Right. Even if your shoulder isn't up to snuff type of thing. Right. And like, I think that really is our utility. And I think that's the direction we need to move is just like, you don't give a damn about your knee so much if you're physically in good shape. Right. You're not like your back. And I really just think, Greg Lehman has probably been one of my biggest influences from just like, it really is just that you're just a holistic organism, right? And if there's a shit ton of stress on you, both cognitive or physical, right? Which there's not really, I don't think we really look at it that way. Like, I just played basketball for an hour this morning. I feel like I was tired, but I feel great, right? And it was hard and it was challenging. But like, it's more the shit that wears me down is just like cognitive, like trying to get stuff done, trying to honestly manage my calendar is the biggest stressor, right? And it's just like so much of this just boils down to is like if we just level you up as a human, good things start to happen, right? And that doesn't mean we're not going to work on your shoulder, but it's also like, hey, like you can still squat, you can still run, you can still take care of yourself. And if your fitness, and it doesn't, I kind of have a hard time with, so much of it is comparison, where it's like, hey, these are standards that everybody should meet. It's like, I don't know about that, but I do think everybody should move in the direction of like better, right? Look at where you're at now and say, what can I do to get a little bit better? And that looks different for everybody. Like, if you want to be good at marathons, then you don't necessarily need to squat freaking 400 pounds or 315 pounds type of thing to be good at that. It may be part of your journey, right? But yeah, I'm with you, and I think like we just have to get people to be a little courageous about like stepping into the unknown with some of this stuff.
Yeah, and that's why I'm such a big I'm a big preacher of like exercise and it being a big part of what we do. And I think it, it's obviously there's a lot of evidence to support like there's thing doing that is a good way to help mo like a lot of different injuries, right? Like even just from like tendon-based injuries, like all the kind of research supporting that. So I'm biased to that. But I think even deeper than that, it's like exercise and movement can show people what exercise and movement can show people that they can do more than they ever thought possible. And unlocking that in their mind is the key, I think. And why I always think exercise should be something and movement is something that we leverage, because you're not going to do that with a modality. Like, you're not going to do that with some type of manual therapy thing, or you're not going to do that with like dry needling. Like, sure, it's going to manage symptoms or whatever, but it can give you some time to have conversations. But like, to really truly show people that they can do more than they ever thought possible, if you can unlock that in someone, that's game changing, man. And I think like exercise and movement can do that the best. And it doesn't have to be deadlifting, 400 pounds. It could be simply showing someone that they can actually flex through their spine without it being the end of the world, and they can carry on. Like, that is at some times the showing people they could do something they never thought possible. And I think even that can really spark a change and people. And I just think we need to utilize that way more as a profession.
What? How old are you?
I'm 31.
31, 36. What was your perception of like 30-year-olds at like 20?
At 20, that's a good question. Yeah, that is hilarious to think about. Yeah, I thought 30-year-olds were definitely old. Like,
You're right.
I'm not gonna lie. But then, like, I always had a very optimistic mindset around the physical body. So even like, a lot of people say it's downhill from 30. Like, even when I was in my 20s, I never thought about that. Probably because I was surrounded by, people that were just like doing crazy stuff physically at 30, 40 years old. So like I've always had a very optimistic mindset of that. But I definitely like from just like thinking about at 20, thinking about being 30, I'm like, whoa, that's like pretty old. But now that I'm 30 and I am where I am and just thinking about it, I'm like, actually, this is like so young because I think in the last 5 years, it's probably been the most like transformative and just like my development and my career and my personal development that I'm like, dude, so much changed in 5 years. I'm like, another 10 years, I'm only 40. Like, what's possible in 10 years? And 40 is still so young. There's still so much opportunity. So I think it shifted my perspective a lot
Yeah.
from that standpoint.
I think like it was for me, it was I'm like trying to think back. It's like I think what I would go back and tell my like 20-year-old self is like stop being in such a hurry, right? Because like you're hurrying through things that like if you just enjoy and you just like say I if I get better today, I will be in a better spot than like I think I was just in such a rush. And even like, I didn't go to PT school till I was 26, right? But I think I thought I had to have so much figured out that it's like, no, like, and today at 36, I don't have shit figured out. Like, I have basically what I have figured out. And you've alluded to this. And I think it's always the game is just like, I have who I want to be on a like a values and show up for people level, right? And I think that's one of the things that we don't do a good enough job of in just like telling kids. I think we screw up by asking kids, what do you want to be when you grow up? When they're like 12 years old. It's like you don't freaking know. And I was so locked in. I wanted to be a Navy SEAL because they were badasses. Like, and I thought like, and I was not a badass. Like my temperament is not badass at all. Like my name's Strength and Kindness, right? Like, I don't necessarily think like being a badass is part of being that job. I think that's like a very much a team oriented job. It's a service oriented job. It was just the hardest thing that I had been aware of, right? But actually that level of hardness just scared me away from actually pursuing it. And I'm very happy. But like, there was so much guilt and shame because I told people that I wanted to do that when I was 12 years old and 16 years old. And then I realized, like, who cares? Like, nobody cares, right? But I was holding on to this guilt and this shame. And I think that's what people do with all sorts of their stuff, right? Like, oh, I'm overweight. I have all this guilt and shame about it. And it's like, well, you got time to change. If you're willing to go slow, you're probably going to be successful. It's this bullshit culture we've created around. If you don't do it fast, you're failing, right? And that's kind of my ultimate thing is like, it's so cheesy, but like slow and steady in the right direction is way better than spinning in circles, freaking being frustrated by stuff that doesn't even work anyway. Whether that's how we like you mentioned playing a lot of sports. Like, man, the sporting culture in a lot of places is just becoming more and more specialized. I'm like, this is kind of effing kids up, right? We're also moving towards just a very specialized, I think, education system where people are gonna not know how to do enough diverse things to like actually feel good about, prospects, right? So like, I don't know if that any of that resonated with you, but like, that's just where I come from with a lot of this stuff.
Yeah, totally, man. I think to tie back in a little bit to just like what we talked about with this like super physio idea and creating your own version of that. It's like when you're content with that and you've explored that enough, like then you can be cool with like taking that slow approach because you're showing up on a daily basis like as you as or as close to as possible as you can. And that gives you this sense of like fulfillment. And it's like, okay, whatever shows up now, whether it's like a new job opportunity, whatever, it's like, I'm good, you know? And I think from a physio career, it's like we don't do that enough to where you get thrusted into doing something that you don't want to be really doing. And then that's where it starts driving a lot of this anxiety. And you feel this urgency of like, well, I got to do more and I got to get this. I got to get to this next job because I just don't feel content with that. And I just like, I encourage a lot of our like students and new grads and like even just clinicians now to like go through that process. And this is just a parallel to life. It's like I took a lot of this stuff in our mentorship from just like personal development things that I've learned about developing myself as a human, because ultimately that's what it is at its core, you know?
Yeah, I think like that's kind of what I try to tell people, like just figure out who you are and just realize that most people are just gonna like, I mean, I don't know, I'm sure you and it's Will, right? You and Will
Yeah. Will, yeah.
have, looked into and think about like general effects or like the placebo effect or what's the, I'm trying to think of the word right now. Contextual factors, right? And I had a buddy of mine who's a chiro. His name's David Newton, and he's like, he went to chiro school because he's like, well, I want to help people. And then he like realized, oh, this is fucking not what I thought it was, right? And
Yeah.
which is what happens to a lot of people. And you either drink the Kool-Aid, or you try to do something different. And a lot of it's just like he said this story, and I keep thinking about it. It's like if you go into a chiropractor's office and it's like clean and they greet you by name and they're very kind to you and they manipulate your spine and they say, hey, all right, go for a walk this afternoon, drink some water, that's gonna have an effect, right? If you go into a place that's dirty and they forget your name and they do the exact same joint manipulation, like what's that gonna, is it gonna have the same effects? And it's like that's so much of what this is. Like the amount of people that you ask, like they got their workout in, whether, like, how do you feel afterwards? I feel great. I'm so glad I did it. I didn't want to do it. Right. Or when people come and see me in person and it's like, yeah, I wasn't feeling good. Now I'm feeling good. It's like, this is what it's about, right? Is changing that. It changes you. It changes you quickly, right? It's hard to get going. But once you get going, it changes you. And then you try to just feed that feed forward, that feeds forward over time, right?
Yeah, totally. And that's why, like, when I think about, setting up an environment to have people thrive, it's like a lot of the environments that we set up in from a rehab perspective just don't, they don't motivate people. They don't make people excited. They don't give people, any, it's not hopeful a lot of times. It's like, that's a big thing that we try to do here is like create an unforgettable experience by the way that the place looks and how we communicate and like the experience that we try to provide a client. 'Cause like in at the end of the day, like that's what's going to keep people wanting to show up and come. And we know that if people just keep showing up and we keep progressing them, and we keep adapting them, they're going to get there, you know?
I love that. It's crazy because it really, I think me and you have had to go down the, and this is one of the hard things is like you have to go down the rabbit hole to come back out and be like, oh, like what really matters is helping people show up and be consistent, which looks different for a lot of people, right? Helping people find ways to feel safe while like pushing, right? And then yeah, just like letting, honestly, man, the I'm just it sounds crazy to maybe young practice. I'm trying to give the keys to the car away to the person and just like let them drive, right? And then I'm there. Maybe I'm not in the passenger seat all the time, but like I'm like the parent is like, you scratched the car? All right, well, what do we do this time, right? Or if I'm in the passenger seat, it's like, okay, where are we going? And it seems like that's what you're at too.
Totally. And I think like that rabbit hole that we had to go down is it, my goal is to just shorten and shorten that for people, because
Yeah.
even for me, it was a lot shorter than some of my mentors, right? Because of them passing on the wisdom and the experience. And so my goal is like, if we can continue to just, share that and express that to people and people follow us and they shorten that, it's like, ideally we're, that's how something, changes. And I think, change isn't a, change is a good thing sometimes, and there's a lot of great things that our profession has done and continues to do, but there's also a lot of things that we can evolve to make it better and grow. And then in 10 years from now, that's going to happen, when we just need to keep facilitating that type of mindset with the people that are coming through.
Yeah. Final thoughts. Where do you think PT as a profession will be in like 20-ish years?
Oh, yeah. I think you're gonna see it play out to be a positive for people that take a approach to rehab that I would say you and I take. And what I mean by that is like a coaching mindset focused on health, focused on getting people back to being active or pursuing goals in their life. I think like that is where we're headed, in terms of where I think the profession can go to continue to really be valuable. How that gets consumed, it's hard to predict, but I mean, we're definitely going to move away from as much like, I think there's always going to be a space for in-person care, but the scalability of those skills go beyond just like in person. So like we already see that happening with virtual stuff and like even utilizing, AI and all that kind of stuff. Like I think that's going to come thrusting into the profession more and more. But I think like the skill set that clinicians should be building is around that education, that guidance, that accountability, that coaching mindset. Because I think that is going to become way more important as society moves away less and less from like, oh, I need to like go into this person to get help. Because like you can pop online at any point in time and find someone that aligns with you and work with them from basically anywhere. And so I think that's just like a general thought. I think you're going to also in Canada, at least, I can only speak to that. I think you're just going to see a change in how, insurance companies are, providing benefits for people around physio. I think there's just going to be shifts in how that's supported. I don't know exactly how it is, but what I think is going to happen is it's going to allow the market to dictate the value more than the insurance companies dictating the value of where people go. And I think that's a good thing for people that are identifying themselves as a brand and as someone that treats a particular way, because the market's going to dictate that more, and people are going to be able to go and work with people they want solely based on value, not based off of like insurance supporting them to do that. I don't know exactly how that looks. It's kind of like a big picture thought that I have, but something along those lines.
Yeah. No, I think you're hitting it in, I don't know exactly know where nobody knows where stuff's gonna go over the next 20 years. I think you're right though. I think the leveraging of virtual and like components of what I'm doing, in person, is kind of the future. I was just exposed to a few people that were like barbell coaches that, they coached online, and I'm like, oh, like, okay, like this is cool. And, I'm like, well, most of what I believe in is like helping the person understand what they're going through and appropriately grading the exposure and trying to build them up, right? And there is utility to seeing people in person, and there's utility to seeing to not, right? Like, a lot of adults, if you give them, like, if you have a good structure and like you see them once a month, like good things can happen. If you're dependent on visits, I'm always just kind of like follow the money type of mentality. I don't know if you've ever seen The Big Lebowski, but it's like follow the money, Lebowski. Why do people, and there's nothing wrong with cash-based practice and stuff, but like if you have to sell 10 sessions or whatever to like keep yourself afloat, then like that's what you're gonna do, and you're gonna try to bias people to utilizing that. You'll also probably attract people who want that, right? It's just like personal training is never going to go out of never gonna stop being a thing, because there are people who are really busy that if they don't have an appointment on their schedule and they have somebody there, they're not going to go exercise, and they make enough money to justify it, right? So, if you're a personal trainer and you want to make a good living, just like realize that and be good at marketing yourself and getting those types of people in the door, right? And for physios, I think that the line is just grayer, because it's like if the person's not hurt, like our I think how we look at it is, well, if they're not hurting, what am I doing? Am I just a trainer? And it's like, I don't give a shit what I'm doing. As long as I'm helping that person get stronger, more capable, be proactive, like that's what this is about. And I think we're gonna find this. I think we're always gonna kind of brush up against this, like, what, where's our spot in like the healthcare thing? And I think as a practitioner, I think you're alluding to this well. It's like, if you're somebody that's a student, like, get a freaking training, get a certificate to train people and have that in your pocket. A, because it's fun and you learn a shit ton, but B, it's a really good like continuum of care type of opportunity, right?
Yeah, I don't. I think I agree with you. I don't think what I was trying to get at is like I don't think it's gonna matter because like just like you said it like it doesn't matter like, if you think I'm a PT or a physio or whatever, it's like I'm just helping you. It's like
Yes.
the consumer is also going to view it that way because
Yes, I agree.
they just want to get help. So I think like the term physio is something that's been like leveraged in marketing, and I think like less and less as time goes on, that's going to be hold as much weight. It's just going to be like, can you help me? And then how do you, as the individual, the physio or the business, how do you present yourself to the public so that they can find you to work with you? And I think that's where it's important to understand, who you are, what your values are, what your standards are, how you communicate that, how you market that,
I love that you've mentioned that about like 15 times because it's just the most important stuff. Who are you? What are your values? How do you want to help people? And then just don't be afraid to talk about that stuff, right? And show up for people. So,
100%.
Dalton, this has been fun, man. I appreciate you coming on. Where can people find you in a variety of different ways?
Yeah, I would say if you want to like clinically, you can check out at the Movement PTs on Instagram. That's at the MVMT PTs. That's like all clinical stuff. And then our podcast and mentorship is just at PT Coffee Cast on Instagram. You can check us out there. We got a ton of like podcasts that we put out. We've been doing that since 2017. And then if you care about me as an individual, you can check out my own Instagram page at dlano.93. It basically is a lot of what the movement is as well. So it's all one, basically.
Yeah, no, I love it. I love the fact that you've been on it since 2017 because that's the other thing that people need to realize. Like, five posts on Instagram don't mean shit. 100 posts on Instagram kind of doesn't mean shit, right? Like, so play the
Yeah.
long game and get good at that stuff, man.
Yeah, I always tell people if you want to laugh and you're worried about putting yourself out there, like out of fear of like how other people are going to perceive you, go all the way back to like the second or third post we ever posted on our Instagram page, and you will feel a lot better about yourself.
Yeah, I've told that to people too, and I've looked at my first ones, and it's like, damn, I literally just like wrote, like did like you know the Simon Sinek start with why? Like I literally just like hand drew a bullseye, and like it was like, but you know like that's also in, I will say this kind of to wrap things up, like in a world that is becoming more and more, I don't want to say inhuman, but it kind of is, like freaking be a human. Like, you know, just be a human. It's not gonna, you're not gonna get millions of likes for some of the stuff, but being a human and learning and like doing all this stuff is kind of the point of it. And so I think don't be afraid to do that.
Yes, leverage that as much as you can.
All right, man. I appreciate you. We'll do this again. This was a lot of fun. I'm glad you reached out and I'm glad to talk. I'm happy to do it anytime. So I appreciate you, buddy.
Likewise, dude. Thank you.
Peace.
Peace.